Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, October 29th. Pioneer CEO, oil price to rebound to $120 next year. Sheffield, U.S. needs to invest more in pipelines, liquefied natural gas terminals to produce more, by Mitchell Furman and Alex Steele. The price of oil could rebound and reach $120 a barrel next year when China reopens its economy from coronavirus-related lockdowns, said the boss of Pioneer Natural Resources Company, one of the biggest producers in the Permian Basin in the U.S. Crude prices have declined during the summer as Chinese lockdowns hurt consumption. Brent, the international benchmark, traded Friday at around $96 a barrel. I still think they will probably get back to $120 sometime mid-next year once China opens up, Scott Sheffield said in a Bloomberg television interview. He didn't say if he was referring to Brent or West Texas Intermediate, the U.S. benchmark price. Sheffield also said China's growing energy infrastructure could surpass the U.S. if the country doesn't invest more in areas such as pipelines and liquefied natural gas terminals. Pioneer, Next Era Plan Wind Generation Facility, by Mella McEwen. Years in the making, a wind generation facility planned by Pioneer Natural Resources and a subsidiary of Next Era Energy Resources for southeastern Midland County is moving closer to reality. Midland Independent School District has been asked for a tax limitation on the project, and Midland County Commissioners have been asked for a tax credit, abatement, or deferment for the project, known as Pioneer Hut Wind Energy, as well as a road use agreement. The tax abatement is a very important component of the project, Mark Berg, Pioneer's Executive Vice President, Corporate Operations, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. It's what Next Era needs to complete the project. He stressed that MISD alone would garner between $11 million and $12 million in new tax revenue during the next 15 years when the project goes online. Beyond that, he said the project would bring more capital into the Permian Basin and create new jobs. Next Era is developing the facility, a 141-megawatt facility comprised of 47 3-megawatt turbines that will be placed on surface acreage Pioneer owns on the Hutt Ranch. Berg said the company has substantial oil and gas infrastructure on the ranch. Pioneer has agreed to purchase power from the facility, expected to be operational in 2024, for use in its oil and gas operations. Targa Resources will also participate, using power from the facility for its processing plants. Pioneer and Targa are also participants in the 160-megawatt Concho Valley Solar Project through Targa's power purchase agreement. That project began delivering renewable energy this month. Pioneer has aggressive targets to reduce its emissions throughout the Midland Basin, Berg told the Reporter Telegram, a commitment he said Targa also shares. Pioneer Hut Wind and Concho Valley Solar will also provide an offset to Pioneer's Scope 2 emissions through the use of renewable electricity. While the two projects are Pioneer's first renewable power projects to directly participate in, we do plan on participating in others, Berg said. CRT on minds of community members. MISD feedback sessions have few but vocal speakers, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD held a second opportunity for the community to provide feedback about the characteristics and qualifications it would like to see in the district's new superintendent. And for the second time in a row, few people showed up. And for the second time, The promotion of social and emotional learning was part of the feedback. Midland ISD is seeking to replace former Superintendent Angelica Ramsey, who has left for Fort Worth ISD. In her wake, a debate about social and emotional learning and CRT has taken place. First, candidates for school board talked about it during forums. There hasn't been much support for seeing CRT being promoted and practiced inside the district. The district has told parents that they have the ability to pull their students from classes when they disagree with the topic being addressed. Two of the first three speakers on Thursday evening at Legacy High School provided the next board feedback that the next superintendent didn't need to California My Texas, possibly a shot at Ramsey, who came to Midland from a California school district. One man said that the school district doesn't co-parent with families across the communities, and there is no need for partisan or political issues from the political right or left working their way in daily lessons. They stated traditional West Texas values and not questionable content should be promoted. Parents, they said, should have unfettered access to content and informed of decisions when it comes to class content changes. The fourth speaker of the evening called for a superintendent willing to listen, be decisive, and not afraid to take risks. She said it is impossible to keep everyone happy and that the next superintendent has to find ways to do what is best for all students, even if that means offending groups of students, teachers, and constituencies. It wasn't until the fifth and last speaker of the night that academic improvements under Ramsey were mentioned. He called for a continuation of the focus on math, reading, and writing, stating the results from the last school year were a great start. Lastly, the first speaker mentioned that the next superintendent needs to stay longer than a year. As a coach, the team gets better every year I am with them, said Legacy High School soccer coach Chris Bryant. He added Midland ISD needs someone who will be here and stay here for the long haul. The content collected during the two meetings this week will be passed on to the next school board, which will be assembled for the first time following the November 8th elections. It will be that board that will select those candidates they want to interview and ultimately pick as the lone finalist. Midland ISD officials have stated they would like the next superintendent in place by early January. Community Roundup. Keep Midland Beautiful Fall Cleanup. Keep Midland Beautiful held a celebration picnic for groups that are participating in the fall cleanup of the community. KMB reminded residents that the Fall Sweeps annual cleanup continues through November 20th. Participating groups can clean up a designated area anytime until then. Groups and individuals can still register today at keepmidlandbeautiful.org or call 432-688-7745. This year's event is sponsored by HEB, City of Midland, Occidental Petroleum, Endeavor Energy Resources, Chevron, Community National Bank, One OK, Bettenbow Homes, Atmos Energy, Midland Health, PDC Energy, Kent Quick, EOG Resources, Kodiak Gas Services, Theta Automation, and City First Mortgage Services. Pop Spot Midland returns. After a successful show in the spring of 2022, Midland's famous pop-up shopping experience will return to the Bush Convention Center this holiday season on November 10th through the 11th. Guests will have the opportunity to peruse from more than 70 vendors while shopping small, giving back, and having fun, as Stacy Grossi, Pop Spot founder and president, would say. Attendees are encouraged to purchase $20 VIP tickets and enjoy an exclusive cocktail hour. Swag bags filled with one-time offers from local West Texas businesses and chic shopping experience from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. November 10th. VIP ticket sales will be donated directly in support of the Boys and Girls Club of the Permian Basin and the West Texas Food Bank. General admission shopping will begin at 10 a.m. November 11th at the Bush Convention Center. Dog park closures. The City of Midland Parks and Recreation will be closing Beale Dog Park and Hogan Dog Park on alternate days for annual maintenance. Beale Dog Park will be closed Monday, while Hogan Dog Park will be closed Tuesday. In both cases, when one dog park is closed, the other will be open. Calendar. Annual Gem and Jewelry Show sponsored by Midland Gem and Mineral Society, November 5th through the 6th, Bush Convention Center. Texas Recycles Day, November 12th, Midland College Chaparral Center parking lot. What's up, Midland? Bush Convention Center, Midland's Gem and Mineral Society annual show, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. November 5th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. November 6th. Horseshoe Arena. HEB Feast of Sharing, November 4th. Christmas Village Market, November 5th through the 6th. High Stakes Production, November 6th. Heart Energy Executive Oil Conference, November 15th through the 16th. The Gifty Grinchmas Market, November 18th through the 19th. Silver Spur Trade Show, November 19th through the 20th. Cardin International Service Circus, rather, November 21st. Midland Community Theater, Of Men and Cars, Saturday, November 4th through the 5th, 11th through the 12th. A Christmas Carol, November 25th through the 27th. Midland's Trail of Horrors opens Saturday through Monday. Miss Casey's Wonderland, Pumpkin Patch, and Photo Ops all of October. Museum of the Southwest, Midland Downtown Farmers Market, Saturday, November 12th and the 26th. Wagner Newell Performing Arts Center, Chicago, November 1st. West Texas Symphony, November 5th. Tim Allen, Must Be 18 Plus, November 11th. Chavo Rucos Tour, November 13th. Puppy Pals Live from America's Got Talent, November 15th. Joe Bonamassa, The Guitar Event of the Year, November 16th. A Magical Cirque Christmas, November 20th. Lindsay Sterling Snow Waltz Tour, November 21st. Number of rigs in Permian remains flat, by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity inched higher during the month of October as the rig count marked its first monthly increase since July. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count fell by 3 to 768. Still, the rig count rose by 3 rigs for the month and is 224 rigs, or 41% higher than the 544 at work a year ago. There were 610 rigs drilling for crude, down 2 for the week, but up 6 rigs for the month, and 166 more than the 144 reported last year. There were 156 rigs drilling for natural gas, down 1 for the week and the lowest since July. There were 3 fewer rigs drilling for natural gas in October, the first monthly decrease since August 2021. Like the U.S., Texas dropped 3 rigs during the week, reporting 368 at work statewide, 118 more than the 250 counted last October. New Mexico added 1 rig for 106, Alaska 1, and Oklahoma 1. Joined New Mexico as producing states to see rig count increases, while Louisiana 2 and North Dakota 2 joined Texas in seeing lower rig activity for the week. Drilling in the Permian Basin continued to remain flat at 346 rigs, unchanged for the week, and 78 rigs more than the 268 drilling region-wide last year. Lee County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian, with 67 rigs, up 1 for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico, remains second with 36 rigs, unchanged for the week. Martin and Reeves counties hold third at 35 rigs each, unchanged for Martin and up 1 rig for Reeves. Midland County had 31 rigs for a 6th week. Loving County added a rig for 24, while Upton County continued to report 19 rigs. Howard County had 18 rigs for a 3rd week, while Ward County had 16, down 1 for the week. Glasscock County had a rig count of 14 for a sixth week, and Verus Foundations, part of the energy-focused software, as a service firm in Verus, said its U.S. rig count rose 11 to 894 as of October 26th. The count is flat in the last month, but up 36% in the last year. All major regions saw increases in active rigs, with the Anadarko Basin adding 3 rigs to reach 83, and the Permian up by 2 at 331, equaling its 2022 high. The Gulf Coast, 121 rigs, Appalachian Basin, 57, Williston Basin, 43, and DJ Basin, 23, gained a rig each. Falling stockpiles boost oil prices 3.4% this week, by Mella McEwen. Oil prices rebounded this week as reports of falling stockpiles overcame continued worries about a global economic slowdown. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 3 of 5 trading days, including a $2.59 jump Wednesday and a $1.17 rise Thursday, that put prices back over $89 a barrel. WTI ended the week with a 3.4% gain, despite dropping $1.18 Friday to end at $87.90 per barrel, up from $85.05 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $84.38, according to Plains All American. Although oil prices have fallen from the 8-year highs reached this spring and summer amid Russia's invasion of Ukraine, they remain well above what many Permian Basin oil producers say is their break-even price. But don't expect the strong prices to result in significantly higher drilling activity and production as in 2011 to 2014, when the shale revolution was underway. The industry is taking the lessons learned from 2015 to 20, said Jordan Jason, chairman of the board and chief executive officer of U.S. Energy Development Corps. We're paying great dividends to stakeholders and shareholders, he said while in Midland for an event. He added that the capital discipline being displayed by producers, which he expects to continue long-term, is very encouraging. Edward Moya, senior market analyst, the Americas at Onada, said markets remain volatile as China continues to ramp up COVID restrictions. Some U.S. oil giants signal modest commitments to boost production, and the global economic outlook continues to dim. Next week, energy traders will get a better sense of how China's economy is performing despite the COVID lockdowns that happened in October. OPEC will also announce their world oil outlook on Monday, Moya wrote in the daily newsletter he writes. He predicted commodities broadly will also have a reaction to next week's policy decision by the Federal Open Market Committee of the Federal Reserve, as well as the non-farm payroll report. A dovish rate rise could allow for dollar weakness, which could keep oil prices supported here. If risk appetite remains healthy, WTI crude could continue to consolidate above the mid-80s, he wrote. Natural gas futures started the trading week strong, posting 24-cent and 41-cent gains Monday and Tuesday at the Henry Hub, at least. At the Waha Hub in Pecos County, producers saw prices plunge to a negative $2 per MCF amid pipeline maintenance work that has kept 1 billion cubic feet of gas stranded in the Permian Basin. Natural gas futures turned negative, sinking 42 cents Thursday and an additional 19 cents Friday to end the week at $5.684 per MCF. Analyst Aid Allen wrote in Rystad Energy's weekly North American Gas and LNG Market Update that gas prices this week were reflecting the current fundamental outlook. Surging dry gas supply, dropping consumption because of mild temperatures, and uncertainty around the restart of the Freeport LNG export terminal. Also weighing on prices is improvement in Europe's natural gas storage inventories, which have eased market pressure on liquefied natural gas demand in the region. The expectation is for price action to remain skewed to the downside without a weather catalyst in the short term, Allen wrote. However, even in a looser domestic market, the Northeast is the most vulnerable to an extreme winter. Obituaries and death notices from the MRT for Saturday. Deanne Salehi peacefully went to heaven on a beautiful October morning in West Texas, complemented by a light rain and cool breeze. She was joyfully received in heaven by her parents, Mary and Wesley McAlpin, and her husband Jeff Salehi. Deanne was born September 6th in Fort Worth, Texas. Deanne is survived by her daughter and son-in-law, Cameron and Winston Kelly, and her two grandchildren. A celebration of life will be held on November 4th at 11 a.m. at First Presbyterian Church, with a reception following at the Racquet Club. She will be buried next to her beloved husband at the Hill Country Ranch. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to First Presbyterian Church or Manor Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Maurice Reese Petrie, 79, of Midland, passed away on October 24th. Reese was born August 23, 1943, in Midland, to Everett Selden and Norma Nani Simpson. Reese is survived by her devoted husband, Jesse Petrie, son Taylor Miller and his children, Jesse's children and their children, and her great-grandchildren. Reese is also survived by her brother, Pat Simpson Woodine, and their children. Reese is preceded in death by her parents and her former husband, Bill Miller. The family requests donations in Reese's memory be made to the Midland College General Scholarship Fund in lieu of flowers, with In Memory of Reese Petrie documented in the memo line. Please make checks payable to Midland College Foundation and send them to Midland College Foundation, care of Gene Jones, 3600 North Garfield, PAD 141, Midland, Texas 79705. Online memorial gifts may be made to the can be made at www.midland.edu/gift. All donations in Reese's memory will be directed to the Midland College Nursing Students RN and LVN programs. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Nakona W. Gregory, 44, passed away on October 22nd in Midland. She was born February 10, 1978, in Alpine, Texas, the daughter of the late Clyde Wayne Gregory and Nancy Melton Gregory. Left to cherish her memory are her sons Adam Gregory and wife Sydney, Aiden Gregory, stepfather George Biden, two grandchildren, and four sisters. A graveside service will take place on Tuesday, November 1st at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park Cemetery. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Vernell Jolly Hunt, 91, has been called home on Wednesday, October 19th in Midland. She was born on April 14th, 1931 in Crockett, Texas, to the proud parents of Randy May Jackson and Bishop Jolly. She is preceded in death by her parents, her daughter Linda Hunt Howell and Marilyn Hunt Lewis. Those who will cherish her memory include brother Jimmy Jolly of Dallas, her precious daughter Velma Jackson of Midland, sons Sammy Hunt III of Oceanside, California, Randall Hunt of Cedar Hill, Texas, Alan Hunt of Glava, Sweden, Cornell Hunt of Midland, and a host of grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A niece, nephew, other relatives, and special friends. At her request, everyone is asked to celebrate her life by doing an unexpected or unsolicited act of love or kindness to someone in her honor. receiving family and friends will be held on Tuesday, November 1st from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral service will be on Wednesday, November 2nd at 11 a.m. at Northside Church of Christ. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park Cemetery. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. William Don Moore of Midland, formerly of Lubbock, passed to his heavenly home on September 19th at the age of 84. He passed away unexpectedly at home. Don was born February 1st, 1938, in Vernon, Texas, to Lola Pearl Singleton Moore and Thomas Littleton Moore. Don was preceded in death by his wife, Kay McFerrin Stowe Moore, his parents and four siblings, Pauline Vaughn, Anna Sue Wilson, Charles Thomas Moore, and Richard Renfro. Surviving family members are son William Travis Moore of Midland and daughter Andrea Coffey and husband Mark of Temple, Texas, and his two grandchildren. A memorial service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 5th at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Beverly Croson, 72, of Midland, passed away October 27th. There is no service planned. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Donald Hermanson, 91, of Midland, passed away October 26th. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, November 5th, at the Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Gail Kenninger, 73, of Midland, passed away October 26th. Celebration of Life will be held at 6 p.m. Monday, December 5th, at Midland Community Theater. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Richard Salgado, 30, of Midland, passed away on Monday, October 24th. Viewing will be Tuesday, November 1st from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Wednesday, November 2nd from 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Tuesday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Funeral service is set for Wednesday, November 2nd at 2 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, October 29th. Man receives life sentence in sexual assault of a child case. After 4 days of testimony, an Ector County jury convicted an Odessa man accused of repeatedly sexually assaulting a 5-year-old girl. They then sentenced him to life in prison. Dakota Lee Hoyt, 30, was convicted of 3 counts of aggravated sexual assault of a child. Prosecutors alleged he sexually assaulted the girl and forced her to give him oral sex in October of 2020 and sodomized her in July 2021. The jury took 3.5 hours to convict Hoyt and 1/2 hour to render his sentence. Hoyt was facing 25 to 99 years or life in prison on each count. Judge John Schroed of the 358th Ector County District Court granted a motion by the state to run 2 of the sentences consecutive to one another. He could not run the 3rd sentence consecutively because the act took place on the same day as one of the other offenses. In asking for life sentences, Assistant Ector County District Attorney Melissa Rain told jurors the victim may not ever be able to process what happened to her, but she will be able to thank them one day for keeping her safe, for keeping that man away from her. Hoyt will not ever be eligible for parole. During closing arguments Friday night, defense attorney Scott Lay argued prosecutors had absolutely no evidence Hoyt abused the child and instead were relying entirely upon posts Hoyt made on a pedophile website. Lay fully admitted were horrendous, disgusting, despicable, nasty, and ridiculous. He's not here in front of you because of the website he was on or the things he posted, Lay said. I'm asking you to do something you won't want to do, but it's absolutely following the law, and that is to find him not guilty. Lay told the jury there were several reasons to acquit his client. Not only was there a lack of physical evidence, but three witnesses testified the girl recanted and that she'd been given candy after telling authorities she'd been victimized, he said. In addition, witnesses said the girl's grandmother and great-grandmother have a history of making false allegations. The defense attorney reminded the jurors the abnormality seen in the girl's rectum by a sexual assault nurse examiner can be caused by other things besides sodomy. There were no tears or scarring seen in the girl's vagina or anus, despite testimony that Hoyt is well endowed. The acts allegedly perpetrated on the girl would hurt, Lay said. No 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old is going to want to see the guy who's inflicting that kind of pain. And yet everyone testified the child's attitude toward Hoyt remained unchanged, Lay said. In fact, everyone testified the girl remains the same bubbly, laughing child she's always been. Lay also reminded the jurors his client repeatedly asked for the child to undergo a second pelvic examination. Why? Because he knows he didn't do this. Why else would an alleged perpetrator ask for that? Lay said. Without Hoyt's internet posts, Lay told the jury they wouldn't even be in the courtroom. While he suspects the prosecutors will argue Hoyt's posts were a confession, Lay said his client was just saying what would be considered cool on that particular website. His client has an unfortunate addiction to pornography, he said. I'm not in any way saying Dakota is a good person and he's being vilified. What he wrote was nasty and gross, but we don't live in a country where we put somebody in prison for writing such things or for something that could happen, Lay said. During his closing argument, Assistant Ector County District Attorney William Prasher told the jurors that Lay is correct. What Hoyt posted was a confession, he said, before he had read some of them aloud. I don't want you to convict him because he's going to do it in the future, but because he did it in the past, Prasher said, his voice rising. What did the defendant tell you in these posts? He's bragging about it. He said, I do this. Not that he thinks about doing this or that he wants to do this. He said, I do this. And the thing is, this was months before all of this came out. On Thursday, Prasher had a Homeland Security special agent read post after post after post, allegedly written by Hoyt on Rapey Sue from October 1, 2020 to December 1, 2020, when the federal government shut down the website. Using sexually explicit and crude terms, Stretch XW Wood 2020 repeatedly asked for people to share child pornography with him. He also expressed positive views on sex with children, incest, gang rape, anal sex, and men sexually assaulting their wives. He also bragged about the size of his penis and alleged that he knew a 4-year-old with a voracious appetite for giving him oral sex. Hoyt's confession on the website is perhaps even more believable because no law enforcement officers were beating it out of him, Prasher said. As for physical evidence of the abuse, the girl's mother testified the child doesn't have any of the medical conditions that cause rectal abnormality seen by the sexual assault nurse examiner. However, Prasher said, the jury only has to believe Hoyt touched the girl with his penis, not that he penetrated her. If he tore her up, everyone would know and he'd be caught, Prasher said. He knows what to do and what not to do so he doesn't get caught. This is Jane reading from the OA for Saturday, October 29th. City of Midland files motion to dismiss an MCS case. In the latest back and forth between Midland Christian School and the City of Midland over the arrest of its top administrators, the City of Midland has filed a motion to dismiss the lawsuit. The lawsuit was filed in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Texas in Midland by Midland Christian against the City of Midland. Plaintiffs are former Superintendent Jared Lee, former Principal Dana Ellis, former Principal Matthew Counts, former Athletic Director Greg McClendon, and former head baseball coach Barry Russell. The defendants are the City of Midland, Jenny Alonzo, Rosemary Sharp, and Camilo Fonseca, all of the Midland Police Department. U.S. District Judge Barbara M.G. Lynn of the Northern District was chosen to preside over the case. Rusty Harden is the defense attorney. In August, former Superintendent Jared Lee, former Principal Dana Ellis, former Principal Matthew Counts, former Athletic Director Greg McClendon, and former head baseball coach Barry Russell filed suit against the City of Midland, Midland Police Department, and Detective Jenny Alonzo, following the exoneration of the five on false allegations that they failed to report a sexual assault in January. The suit also names officers Rosemary Sharp and Camilo Fonseca. According to a news release from plaintiff's attorney, Rusty Harden, the school's investigation determined what happened was nothing more than locker room horseplay among members of the baseball team. Almost 3 months later, a Midland County grand jury investigating the incident declined to indict any of the five plaintiffs in the case. The suit stems from an incident in which a young student suffered a physical assault that included a baseball bat. According to the motion, the plaintiffs failed to allege any facts that overcome the officer's qualified immunity. A statement from Rusty Harden and Associates, LLP, responding to the motion says, "The city's response does not seriously address the myriad of falsehoods and omissions that were evident in Detective Alonzo's arrest warrant affidavits accusing these five career educators of failing to report an alleged sexual assault. The response disappointingly continues to perpetuate the falsehood that the plaintiffs were not cooperating with the police department's investigation when they absolutely were. It overlooks the role of Detective Alonzo's direct supervisor who participated at every step of the tunnel-visioned, biased, and malicious campaign against the Midland Five. And it attempts to insulate the city from the responsibility despite the city's awareness of Detective Alonzo's repeated pattern of unconstitutional and unprofessional behavior. Qualified immunity does not and will not protect the City of Midland from the abuse of power that is a central issue in this case. And make no mistake, that's exactly what it was, an abuse of power. We look forward to responding in due course." This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, October 29th. Local news roundup. Man accused of threatening to shoot woman, her children. An Odessa family hid some kids in a closet Thursday night and called 911 after they said a man threatened to shoot them. According to an Odessa Police Department report, residents in the 1200 block of Royalty called 911 around 7:15, saying Peter Allen Christensen, 33, was trying to run people over with a pickup truck. When officers arrived, they saw a Dodge pickup truck had crashed into a chain-link fence and shed in the alley behind the residence, the report said. The driver of the truck, later identified as Christensen, ran from police for about 10 yards before obeying their commands to stop and get on the ground. During the ensuing investigation, officers were told Christensen had called his former girlfriend's sister earlier in the day to say he was going to shoot up the house on Royalty and the kids, the report stated. According to the report, the woman filed a report with the Ector County Sheriff's Office, but Christensen showed up at the house and began making the same threats. The people inside the house placed the kids in a closet and called 911. Christensen is then alleged to have driven down the alley and crashed into two fences and two sheds. The damage caused was estimated at $5,000. Breath tests revealed Christensen was legally intoxicated, the report said. He was arrested on suspicion of two counts of terroristic threat, two counts of criminal mischief, evading arrest, possession of marijuana, and driving while intoxicated. All but the criminal mischief charges are misdemeanors. The criminal mischief charges are state jail felonies, punishable by 6 months to 2 years in prison. He remained in the Ector County Jail Friday afternoon. His bond had not yet been set. Woman arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault. A 25-year-old Odessa woman was arrested late Tuesday night after her former boyfriend accused her of attacking him with a hammer while he was holding one of their children. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a 911 disturbance call shortly after 11 p.m. on Tuesday from the 3000 block of Laurel Avenue. The 911 caller told a dispatcher his former girlfriend, Amita Mimosi, was breaking windows at the house, the report stated. Prior to their arrival, officers were told it sounded as though the caller and suspect were getting physical. When an officer arrived, he saw several windows had been broken in the front of the house, and a woman came running from the back, yelling, "He has a hammer." The officer told the woman, later identified as Misomi, to stay in front of the house while he went to the backyard, but she got into a Mercedes-Benz and left, the report stated. Officers interview a man at the scene who had scratches and new bruises all over his back, abdomen, and legs, according to the report. He was also bleeding from the head, and that blood was all over a onesie being worn by the 11-month-old girl he was holding. The man told officers Mimosi struck him repeatedly with a hammer and with a leveling tool during an argument while he was holding the baby. He also said he was on the phone with 911 during part of the assault, and he and the baby fell to the ground, causing him to drop the phone, the report said. Mimosi then smashed the phone with the hammer, he said. According to the report, when Misomi was found, she admitted to trying to pull the baby and their 3-year-old son away from her former boyfriend, causing them to fall. She was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a first-degree felony, punishable by 5 years to life in prison, 2 counts of endangering a child, a state jail felony, evading arrest with a vehicle, a third-degree felony, and interference with an emergency call, a misdemeanor. She remained in Ector County Jail Thursday night on surety bonds totaling $62,000. Eighth grader arrested. An eighth grade boy assigned to the Alternative Center was arrested Thursday after making a threat on his bus. The student got into an argument with the bus driver and said he would bring a gun Friday and shoot up the school. The student was removed from the bus and arrested. Class A misdemeanor threat or exhibition of a weapon on school grounds or a bus, a news release said. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, October 29th. Local nonprofit receives surprise donation. On September 6th, the nonprofit Midland Inspires Board of Directors voted unanimously to donate the organization's remaining assets to the capital campaign of local nonprofit Fix West Texas. The total amount was over $15,000. Fix West Texas is a Midland-based animal services organization dedicated to preventing unwanted litters, keeping pets healthy, and reducing community shelter and euthanasia rates. They provide low-cost spay, neuter, and preventative medical services in Midland and across several West Texas counties. Fix West Texas was a finalist in Midland Inspire's 2022 grant cycle and presented to the women's group in May. Midland Inspires, a self-funded, women-only philanthropy, was founded in 2019 by Brenda Harrison and Lisa Fielder. Through their efforts, those involved in Midland Inspires grew and came to understand more about the concept of responsible and lifetime philanthropy in the quest for Midland's betterment. The group found initial success with membership development, fund development, and philanthropic education. Their membership granted over $100,000 to Family Promise of Midland in 2021 and $145,000 to Be the Change in 2022. Ultimately, however, they struggled to recruit volunteers to sustain the organization, and the Midland Inspires board voted in June of this year to cease operations. We're all very sad about dissolving Midland Inspires, but having made that difficult decision, we were determined to do it the right way, Board Chair Jonna Smoot said. We've notified our members and the community, paid all the bills, filed all the paperwork, and our final task was to disperse our remaining funds in accordance with Texas law. We share a great respect for the Fix West Texas compassionate work and are delighted to have such a worthy cause to support. To the end, Midland inspires. Story with the simple dissolution of it is a simple story, much left untold. The board of directors consisted of John Smoot, Terry Pender, Cheryl Mertz, Julie Edwards, Becky Lindemood, Naomi Paredes, Diane Williams, and Lisa Fielder, serving as executive director. There were no paid positions at Midland Inspires during its tenure. Of note, Lisa Fielder had been a board member, but resigned her position to take on the unpaid position of executive director, leading into and for the two-year grant cycle. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, October 29th, from the death notice section. In Odessa, Shelley Butler, 57, died on Saturday, October 22nd, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 1:30, October 29th, at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. In Odessa, Christy Elaine Conklin, 55, died Monday, October 24th, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Velma Bejaran Hinojos, 63, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 22nd, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, November 4th, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Graveside interment will follow at 2 p.m. at the Los Angeles section of Ector County Cemetery. Mike Bartlett is officiating. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Thomas Ray Johnson, Sr., 51, died Monday, October 24th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Philip Wayne Lynn, 72, of Odessa, died on October 25th. Memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Monday, November 7th, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. The family will receive friends for visitation at the funeral home from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. prior to the service. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. In Midland, Mabel Flores Toothman, 87, died Wednesday, October 26th. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. October 31st at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Hello, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa Mercury, Sunday, October 30th, 2022. Diesel fuel shortage ominous. Refineries fall further behind rampaging demand, by Bob Campbell. The United States is running short of diesel fuel, and the consequences could be grave. Waco economist Ray Perryman says that there are only a few weeks' supply left with the nation's 130 refineries going full blast and the truck fleet, trains, ships, farmers, and military potentially facing big challenges. Much of our logistics system relies on diesel, and if we get to zero inventory, there will be disruptions, Perryman said. There's not a good way to deal with the shortage. We've already seen prices rise dramatically, and it will continue as supplies tighten. If things worsen, companies with diesel-powered trucks and trains will start cutting. Semis, largely powered by diesel fuel, drive down Fodry Road Friday. The U.S. is facing the shortages of that fuel. Back on routes to respond to higher prices, there will be shipping delays and other problems. Farm equipment runs on diesel and harvest could be delayed. The food supply from harvest to distributors to grocery stores runs on tight timelines, and even a few days of disruptions in trucking could be felt. Having recently modeled the effects of trucking rails on the supply chain, Perryman said, it's a bad situation, but I don't foresee it reaching a point where a large portion of diesel-powered vehicles stop running. However, given the fact that the supply chain has already been challenged by the pandemic and its aftermath, any problems due to diesel shortages are magnified. Diesel inventories have been running low for months. In August, for example, distillate inventory was the lowest for the month since 2000. Usually inventories increase through the summer ahead of the harvest and the winter heating season. but that hasn't been the case for the past couple of years. Worse, the U.S. Energy Information Administration is projecting that the shortages will be around at least through the next spring. Perryman said the result is higher prices for fuels, a commitment pump, and the bumps of almost everything else. There are a variety of reasons for the shortage, he said. One factor is the strong increase in demand that occurs as economies reopened after the worst of the pandemic. There have been disruptions, such as the Texas freeze in February of 2021. More recently, as many countries decided to stop purchasing petroleum products from Russia, available supplies dropped and there was a scramble for the available supply. Advanced Power Alliance, Texas Vice President Judd Messer from Austin, that the demand for diesel is outpacing supply as the cost to build inventories is rising and the war in Ukraine has introduced market constraints like import bans. The need for expanding diverse energy economy is evident in Texas and is well positioned to deliver due to an abundance of renewable energy resources like wind and solar, cleaner burning natural gas, and our highly skilled homegrown workforce, said Messer, who is also chief of staff for Republican State Representative Trent Ashby of Lufkin. These assets, coupled with our state's track record of developing innovative energy technologies, enable our state to lead in delivering the cleaner, cheaper energy that the world demands. The Advanced Power Alliance promotes the development of renewable sources like wind farms and solar projects. Texas's 32 refineries help produce the 4.02 million barrels per day of diesel fuel that Americans used in October. The average price of diesel in the U.S. was 3.67 per gallon at this time last year, according to the EIA. Last Wednesday, it was 5.34. Perryman said there's a movement towards cleaner diesel blends, which has long-term benefits, but complicates production and raises costs. The observed price discrepancy reflects higher state and local taxes, but is a relatively minor factor, he says. Stockpiles are dwindling rapidly across the U.S., and some estimates indicate that we only have enough for a few weeks. Refineries are running flat out, have been for some time. A notable stoppage due to overdue maintenance or other problems could cause further disruptions. The good news is that additional refinery capacity is coming online over time. That still won't leave much slack. Refineries take years and billions to build if companies can even get permits, and in the current political environment, such investments take on additional risk. In the wake of aggressive Federal Reserve policies, Perryman said high prices and short supplies will be ongoing issues unless economic growth slows markedly in the good-producing sector. Foundation grant going to revamp NTO Gallery by Ruth Campbell. With a grant from the Education Foundation, George H.W. Bush, New Tech Odessa art teacher, Jesus Valerino decided to revamp a displaced place for work by students, teachers, and even community. He was awarded $5,876 grant from the Education Foundation to Enkindle Gallery. The grant went for a new hanging system and lighting, Valerino said. We had a gallery, but the past 2 years, it was a COVID room, he said. Principal Gerardo Ramirez said every campus had to have a designed area to limit exposure to COVID. At NTO, it was the art gallery. With the grant, the gallery will reopen. I just got the stuff for it last week, Valerino said. He added that probably in the next few weeks, he'll be introducing a chapter of the National Art Society and opening of the gallery. We're thrilled to update our art gallery, thanks to the Education Foundation. Our art learners are excited. They've been working diligently to prepare for the art gallery reopening. Principal Gerardo Romero said in a text message, Valerino said the grant will set the gallery up to be super nice. We really got that we could have ever dreamed of to set up a real gallery, Valerino said. Last year, he got a grant for equipment from the Phoenix Ceramics Room. They had pottery wheels, but they had to borrow kilns from Permian Basin High School or University of Texas at the Permian Basin. But this year, NTO has about 150 students in its art program. The school has about 500-plus students. The art program is really good, and the kids participate. So even when they're not taking art, they still compete and participate in the state art competition, Valerino said. Students are working on the National Fossil Art Competition that he said won every year since they started it. The contest is put on by the National Park Service. They also participate in VASE, or the Visual Arts Scholastic event. We do pretty good every year. We won 2 state places last year, and hopefully we can do that again, Ballerino said. Ballerina do support you. They help us there, Ballerina said. The foundation conducts workshops to help students write the grants. They're really not complicated. They're super easy to write. They really give you almost a step-by-step of the things that you need. And all the people have the wrong idea of what writing a grant entails. It's really easy, and if you see that your plan is going to make your school better and help your kids have a different perspective of what they're learning, they'll support you 100%, Ballerino said. He already has 2 grants, and they're going to school changing. One of my pitches on my grant for the ceramics room was staff mental health, so that's all the teachers could go and do pottery. It's very therapeutic, he added. He's hoping the first show will feature the work of ECISD employees. It's really amazing. I think they impact more people than even they believe. It's really great. I think about getting the whole pottery room set up and now getting a whole gallery. That's for me a dream. I have my classroom and everything, but now I have a pottery room. And now I have a whole gallery, Ballerino said. For an art teacher like him, he said, it's like a dream. It may sound simple, which is not, but it's about curating. It's really a step above the art teacher, or even for the kids. They'll know what it's like to manage an art gallery, he added.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.